You're listening to The Shot Podcast, presented by Grey Goose Vodka. Whether it's a dinner party for 10 or a small kickback, you know the vibes will always be right if you're surrounded by your favorite people. And great company pairs best with a great cocktail. So make it a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Impress your guests in style with an espresso martini or the always effortless classic martini with a lemon twist. No matter what you decide, everyone can appreciate the smooth, delicate taste that only a Grey Goose Vodka Martini can provide. For more info on how to craft a vodka-based cocktail, visit greygoose.com and remember to always sip responsibly.
What an honor to have said here.
Oh, man.
Made the greatest movie ever about barbers. I thought you was going to come here at
NK. Say what? But hold on one hell of a second. It's a barbershop. That's what I feel when you're sitting in here, man. It's good. I'm glad we just in a safe space. All these comics fighting right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, boy. I was going to be coming here like, who y'all got coming in here? Wait a minute. I swear to God, if I got a fight, Chuck and Ducky in this tonight.
Paul Rivera here. On this episode of The Shop, myself and Mav are joined by Nelly.
The first day that the album dropped, Universal presented me with a gold record.
Cedric the Entertainer.
In comedy, certain things are just cultural, man. It doesn't mean that it's theft.
And WNBA legend Becky Hammon.
I love to play basketball. If there's two things I love, it's basketball and Jesus.
Check it out now.
Best thing about my daughter is that
we're similar. Just alike.
Just alike.
Just fucking alike. That's why we clash now. Because she knows how to get
She knows what you
needs.
Care about and what you...
She knows what to get out of me and how to go about it. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the most...
She just like, you motherfucker.
You know what I'm saying?
You go through them hard years, them late teens, that when they like defining themselves like that, that's when you really the most motherfuckers.
First
you
boyfriend, most. She walked in. I said, who is this little fucker? I was talking to her mama. You know, it was at my house. I said, yo, who is this little sitting at the... She said, what you think? He looks just like you. No, he doesn't. And then I had to step back and I was like, damn.
This little nigga looks just like
me. He looked just like me.
That's, I'm in awe of it. My daughter is like my best friend.
Yeah.
But when we have our moments, we have our moments.
Yeah.
The thing we've connected now, she's like, dad, thanks for showing up. I go to therapy with my daughter. I've never been to therapy in a relationship. That's the first time I ever did it with somebody, her and I. When we sit there and sometimes I'd be like, Mav, don't say it. I'd be like, yeah, I gotta say it. Don't say it. It'd be like, you gotta say it. Say what? The facts. That's not what happened. But then I learn and go, but doesn't matter, because that's how she feels. So I gotta appreciate that and understand.
That's the thing, like, guys, we gotta learn to deal with it, you know, because we don't necessarily operate from feelings, you know what I mean?
No. And so, no, we stuff our feelings.
So somebody feels something, you know, it's like, what you feel.
But you said the magic word, showing up.
Showing up.
Well, that's important, though.
And because if you don't, somebody else is going to show up.
Yes, you're right.
1,000%.
That's a great point.
It's going to be a little Nelly showing up at the kitchen table.
Yeah, you better do it. Singing melodies and everything.
Yeah, I told you. Some waves.
Yes. Yeah.
How tall are you?
6'3".
6'3". He's going to be at least 6 feet. When he come walking through your door at 16, 17 for prom, I promise you, he's going to at least be 6 feet. I bet on anything, and the hair is going to be similar.
Said, I want to know what you were doing when you saw the clips or heard the chatter. Like, were you just minding your business at home?
I truly was, man. Like, I'm not really. I'm not an internet
dude. Everybody loves Sam. Like, why Sam?
Everybody got to think about it. I'm truly a grown-ass man, dog. Like, I'm not sitting around watching the internet. Like, that's not what I do. So everybody was hitting me like, yo, but people start calling me right away. Hey, you know, and then. People don't know, St. Louis people are very sincere.
Oh, no,
about
you know
St. Louis
I hit
folks.
You. Yo, what's up?
Hey, like, real, hey, like, off the top, I'm like, well, about what? Hey, what, when dude pull up, what you who, bro? He said, who? They was like, Cat. I was like, oh, that's the same? Yeah. It's literally, dog, it's just it's one of those things for me, like, comedy is definitely a space where we hear jokes, sure, but for me, that was a situation where he was claiming cultural appropriation, in my opinion. That's all I feel like. Driving an old car, rolling down the window, that's 70s. That's
for
what
sure.
If I ask anybody, like, how you drive your car, that's that.
100%.
You can't say my joke about a spaceship is your joke about driving a car, because we doing the same gestures. That's my opinion about it. But,
well, and niggas in the hood been doing them gestures since the 60s.
It's a whole thing.
And what's hypocrisy about it is,
He stole J.B. Smooth's joke.
Again, for me, I appreciate Young Gun. I think he dope, and not for that bullshit he did, but I'm talking about as a comedian. And so I'm like, I've been around this dude many times, which was my whole point.
Well, we have the conversation.
It's like we've never had a personal conversation about that. So why is it this?
Yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. Because if we rock with each other, and I see you, and you like that, you feel that way, then say that to me. Like,
let's have a conversation.
Don't do that later. Yeah. Like. And that's what I didn't really appreciate because, and you know, more than anything, like you could have your opinion about the joke, his fans, his people who love him, all that. Like, I don't wake up worried about that, dog. I've been doing this. I am me.
By the way, Coach, first of all, I gotta say thank you for having the shop in your house.
Oh, yeah.
With the Aces Chrysler, two straight championships.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Coach of the NBA, now I've won two championships at WNBA. And along the conversation, we talk about feelings. Men, what's the biggest difference coaching men versus women?
Oh, feeling. no. You know, I think everybody just has their own personality. There's some guys that are a little bit more outgoing. There's girls that are more outgoing, some that are just, you know, more reserved. And I think it's just getting to know the athlete. And I think at the end of the day, if you can help them win, doesn't matter male, female.
They want to win.
They want to win. And if you know what you're talking about, it could be Kermit the Frog telling them, they're going to do it.
Yes.
If you've built that trust and that relationship with them. So I had a great time. The guys are never the problem. The players are never the problem.
And I think for women care more.
Yeah, well, they're smarter more. For sure.
But
they're
they
smarter.
Care more. They care more they about do. The game. They care more about women. Guys, we'll just take our check.
Yes.
Sure, after a while.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of guys, we do
sure.
care. We have a lot of guys that care.
Yeah. But there are some who... Don't. That same way you're.
And
right.
What makes women's basketball so great is that they care. They'll dive. They'll bust their head. Yep. They'll do that. A guy running towards out of bounds, he's like, executive decision.
Exactly.
Why? Get out of the way when the guy goes
like, I'm on a contract.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I love watching women's.
I love it too.
I mean, what Caitlin Clark, WNBA is awesome. Caitlin Clark outrated an NBA game. Her game. Outrated an NBA game. You must love that, right?
Yeah, no, it's crazy because I think the evolution of women's basketball, like it used to be cool to kind of bash on it. And it always used to tick me off because it's like, all right, come out here and get some then. You think you're so good. Like, if we had a dollar for every YMCA guy that came up and was like, let's play one.
You were
going to
say
one.
Bum.
It's like,
I'll say it for you. Bum. I heard it.
You know, like, stop. Yeah. Stop. And I think the, obviously the visibility, but... at the end of the day, I'll be real straightforward here. NBA guys showing up because when the women's game, and I think that's one of the greatest losses, you know, with Kobe for, I think, the women's game. Like, he personally popularized that orange hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
And that advocacy of like, no, this is legit. Like, game recognizes game. Recognizes game. And at the end
basketball.
Of the day, you watch what these women do. And I'm like, they're just, and first of all, they're getting better and better. Like, they're better than when I played.
Yeah, for real.
And what Becky was talking about, like guys.
Okay, hold on. I have to piss.
Go.
That is
go.
Just a shot.
Go.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay.
I'm
sorry.
I'm
sorry.
Stop. Yeah, that's the shot. Let's just go.
Okay.
It's a bump
okay.
shot.
Bump
I'll
shot,
be back. Go. Nelly's going to Tinkle.
There's one right out that door.
What door?
It's
Becky's
right
house. That door.
There's one right out there. Just turn to the right.
There's,
get my key out.
Way,
let me let you back in.
By the way, Nelly, there's no urinals in there.
No, it's
no, there's men and women. We're accepting of everybody.
Use the bidet.
Said, does it make you at all sad when you see, like, Kat come out and all these people, Monique and everybody, and it's all black comics? White comics don't do that. Does it make you sad at all? Like,
yeah,
that it's just us?
Yeah, I mean, mainly because of the idea that it's just such... the attacks end up being personal, and they end up getting personal, and they get more personal to the people that love you more than you, right? Because that's what I feel like in both of these situations. Like, I can handle the ridicule. I can even handle the accusation.
Yeah.
For me, because I wake up being me. I don't really worry about it. But for the people that love me, and, you know, you realize it touched them so personally that is it hurts folks, right? That's what I really don't like about it. And then, of course, it causes for the what they call like when people do copycats.
Yes.
So you got the copycat crime come now. Yeah. Now everybody got something to say
about somebody. Yeah. 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 That's just pissing me off too.
And it's old. It's like bringing up stuff from like shit. When? What happened? In 89.
And said you.
What are we talking about?
You've been in the game a long time, a super long, amazing career.
Yeah.
In this world of Nelly's back.
Oh yeah.
I hit him timber.
I washed my hands twice too.
Yes. Yeah.
In this age of, to your point, of internet, people like picking apart everything you said, and did he offend this person? Where a comic's job is to make us have fun and laugh. Is this the hardest time ever to be a comedian?
I would think so, man. I mean,
cancel culture and all that, right?
Cancel culture, you don't know where the line is, and it is. And it is an opportunity for so many people to have voices, right? So any joke, anything phrased wrong, you know, however you phrase it, it is a counter side
to
that.
You triggered somebody.
See, even the people that get triggered are now offended that
like
you said that
I'm
triggered.
I feel like the most honest, truthful stuff, too, is the stuff that gets canceled.
Oh,
He's saying the exact truth.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that it is a combination of people just kind of, again, piling on. So that it is. But again, if you're an orator, if you're a person that got to say what you got to say when you walk on stage, you try to calculate the risk of what it is you want to say, and you say it. Like, if you're a writer of a song and you got a way that you want to phrase it, you can only work yourself through it 19 times before you say, this is the way I feel it.
I don't give a damn.
This is the way I feel it. I'm just going to say it.
Now, you also had your first joint was one of the biggest in the history of music. Did you think it was just going to be like that? Because you were young, too. How old were you?
No, we was just...
How old were you?
I was... Okay, here's the thing. Originally, you know, when you get your deal, and we got a deal in the 90s, in 99. So... Back then, they had all these things, artist development, due to all of this and all of that shit, right? So technically, when I got my deal, I was 23. I just, you know, like 23. The record label just put it out, 20-year-old Nelly. I said, shit, the check cleared. I don't give a shit.
20-year-old Nelly.
20-year-old Nelly? 20-year-old Nelly. I don't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? They were like, no, but you look like you're 20. Should I say something or should I not? But again, the check cleared. I didn't care. Wow. So they said I was 20 when I first came out. But I knew, and everybody around me and the whole U City knew, man, that man graduated in 93. Okay, whatever. It's working.
Put back.
You ever played in the Little League World Series?
No, I didn't. Because I was just hoping to go gold. I go gold, I go on tour. I can make a little money. I'll open up a liquor store, car wash, laundromats, barbershop.
Hood business.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, hey,
listen, straight to it.
Yes.
Barbershop, because our group was, like, naturally created in a barbershop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Leroy's Barbershop. Shout out to Leroy's. And that was our whole thing. So I'm thinking, yo, get this money. We open up our own shop, get a couple PXs, which was liquor stores.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I thought that would be it. And the first day that the album dropped, Universal presented me with a gold record. And I was like, I was damn near in tears. And, you know, we just was
fortunate.
But
then how did you not, because my point is like, your shit was so massive.
Instantly.
You were the most famous rapper in the world all of a sudden.
They tell you it's so crazy because we had said, and I know he probably, he probably wish he could go back in a time travel. He did the intros on Country Grammar. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the commercials and the skits, he did those on Country Grammar.
Right, yeah.
But he did those for a little of nothing.
Yeah. Little
of nothing and no.
Emphasize and really
no, I mean,
hold on. And really no.
He
was like, we offered everything. Like, yo, he was like, nah, you know, y'all just getting started. Don't worry about it. We'll knock it out. It's nothing. You know, y'all from the loop.
Yeah.
He did it out of love.
That's
then the shit goes 10 million. He's like, yo, what the?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Where are those points?
That's wild. That's the one you go like, that's crazy.
Yeah, you did do your thing.
Yeah, y'all killed that shit.
Yeah, that was about 4 million, but that's crazy.
Hey, man.
But you
instantly.
Don't, but
oh,
you I don't
did.
Know.
You know what? I did get a platinum record, though. I never got the money. Platinum? Thank you, Nelly. You I check. Did get something, y'all. They presented me with the platinum.
With your name.
Sipping my name saying you yeah. did it. There wasn't no money. I was looking in the back to see if there's a check. But I got that. That's nice, man.
But you was you expecting, like, oh, shit, I'm now Nelly, like...
No, we didn't know. And the thing about it is when you're going through it, you still don't know. You have no recollection. You're just working.
Doing it.
You're just working.
And you're about to go on tour now, right? With Janet.
Yeah. How's that feel? It's dope. I wasn't going to go, but...
Why'd you consider not potentially doing the going on tour with her?
Well, the only thing I was saying was... I had got to a point I wasn't opening for nobody.
Mm. You're Nelly.
You know what I'm saying? Well, I was just at that point. I mean, but it's freaking Janet Jackson. She's just a dope person. And she's like, Nelly, you have to go. I gotta go. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're gonna have so much fun. It's gonna be, okay.
I love that's right. The vibe. Like, I'm about to do a residency with Toni Braxton.
Love and laughter.
Yeah. Look at that. So that's right here in Vegas. And that's the fun idea
that makes
of taking
your love
like
bring
that.
Your ass home.
Beautiful, right? You got the dope music, good times together.
How did that come together?
Has that been done before?
Not in a real way. Yeah, not in a, so. And it was one of the things that, you know, Vegas has been trying to grow the shows. Of course, you know, shout out to Usher. Usher just made the idea of being here and bringing real, like, urban entertainment dope. But the idea of, like, doing, a really great comedian and beautiful love songs and this idea that these are the things that we share as culture. You know, you like good music, we're going to love, we're going to be with our people, and then you want a good laugh in that combination. We're going to do some fun, you know, Sonny and Cher in a way. Like, we're going to have fun with it, you know, clothes and doing things. You know, people be surprised. Toni funny, she unique. You know, these are things that... She gets to get out of herself and not necessarily just be super diva. Like, she can have fun on stage, and we'll do some really cool things together.
So, like, even the skit, she gonna be in as funny. Are you writing all the? Are you writing?
No,
all
we
the
got a combination. Yeah, I write most of the lines.
Her last name together, is still Braxton. It's not Williams.
Not yet. I don't believe.
Okay. Cedric, how did tour idea come together?
Well, mainly a good friend of mine, Demetrius. He thought of the idea, and then and then her manager. Everybody kind of thought of, like, you know, this would be something fun to do. So, you know, it was mainly from the creatives.
How did Birdman feel?
You know what? Birdman was like, you know.
Respect it.
Oh, no.
He respect it.
You're a hustler.
Yeah, that's
you're
my guy.
I love Bird. Yeah, oh,
yeah,
man, that's
yeah,
my guy.
That guy, that's the guy right there.
Nelly, you've had a ton of success. You have three Grammys?
Three
Grammys.
Yes, sir.
Killer Mike, who's been on the show.
Yes, sir.
Just won three Grammys.
Congratulations.
Swept it. None of them were televised, though.
Right.
How's that still happening in 24?
I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those situations to where you would just hope that the Grammys get it together.
When you won all three of yours, did you used to go to the show all the time?
First of all, I wasn't even nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys. Understand that. Country Grammar was 5 million, and I didn't even get nominated as Best New Artist because my album came out in 2000, so I wasn't even on the ballot. In 2001, the great, talented, well-deserving Miss Alicia Keys won.
Right.
And she should have won.
Yeah.
She should have won in 2001. But I wasn't even...
How are you not nominated?
Nominated. Like, Country Grammar's not even nominated. Nelly's not even nominated for Best New Artist ever in
How did
the
you
Grammys.
Feel about that?
I was pissed. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But what are you going to do? Because I'm fairly new. I don't know if I got the right to even be pissed. Yeah. Because these are the Grammys, and you put so much stock into what they know and what they do when you're a brand new artist until you get to have the blessings and the knowledge to someone like Hov to be able to get up there, take their award, and cuss their ass out at the same time.
Right.
Like, you can only hope to be that.
Nelly, coming from the Lou, did you ever have... chip on your shoulder, because everything was LA, New York.
Goddamn
we always
right.
talk about that with the Midwest, Mav. Like,
goddamn right.
Yeah?
Goddamn right. But you got to understand, my era of music was the toughest era in hip-hop ever. Ever. When I put out songs, I had to go against DMX,
Eminem,
Jay-Z, Eminem, Lil Wayne, 50 Cent, Luda,
Nah,
yeah.
All of us are fighting for one spot. So in from 99 to like 2008-10, it's the hardest era
only
ever to get records.
Units M, Pimp Juice, and us.
Becky, you're obviously an incredible coach. Records, numbers speak for themselves. There's been conversation about there will eventually at some point be a woman head basketball coach in the NBA. Do you feel there's an unnecessary importance in that? Meaning like you've already reached the pinnacle of coaching. You won. We're sitting in the home you helped build, right? Back-to-back championships. Would that mean that much more to you being an NBA coach than the success you've already had?
I think it used to.
Okay.
I think it used to. I think that was the goal. I'm so happy here, and I have so much joy coming to coach these women every day. Their vibe, I don't know if you know our group, but they're
I mean, being hilarious. The champs don't hurt.
Yeah, of course.
Back-to-back
champs.
Back-to-back champs.
Yes, winning
souls. Looking like the Bulls over here.
But you know what? I mean, I got calls to interview this last year, and I just said thank you, but no thank you.
Oh, really? You got calls?
You didn't even interview. You didn't take the interviews.
No, I did not. But I want to go back to something you said about the Grammys and not being nominated. And because here's what people don't see is they don't see the pain and the disappointment in these very personal moments. There was some moment where it was like, I don't need your validation anymore. And I guess that's where I land a little bit on the NBA.
Yeah.
Now, I like challenges, but like I don't need it to tell me that I can coach it. And just because you might be like, can do it, doesn't mean you should do it all the time.
Right. Sure, but I got to push back on that because part of that I think is nothing wrong. We're humans. We care. We like to be liked. It feels good to be liked. So if somebody or something doesn't like you, sometimes, especially amongst black men, if I say, man, that hurt me when he said that or she said that, it's like, what? That hurt you? So we
feelings.
Don't ever get a...
Wow. Why are you in your feelings?
Wow,
why are you in your
feelings? Therapy.
My dad is like that for sure. That's that therapy, Sid. I'm learning, Sid. Yeah. I'm learning.
So I would say people... That helping you, for real.
She's really helping me. That's my homie. That's my friend, my daughter, everything. But it's... Sometimes people don't always tell the truth about that. Like if you lose, I lost. That hurts. That sucks. If I went for something, a job, and I didn't get it, I wanted that shit. I didn't get it. Like, I think people can be more forthcoming about that, too.
One of the main goals for each episode of The Shop is to share and learn from the unique experiences of all our guests as we curate conversations with those who are shaping culture. What I've learned is that through the journey, all the hard work, the hustle, and the consistency, it's always important to celebrate your wins. So do it in style and raise a glass to toast the unforgettable moments that continue to make us who we are. Toast to your wins with a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Check out greygoose.com for smooth-tasting recipes. And remember, sip responsibly. The Shop podcast is presented by Grey Goose Vodka.
Let me ask you guys this. You guys have all been great and are in the legend icon phase of your careers, meaning like the amount of success you've had, the longevity of it. When did you guys realize it was a business, right? You played ball. You were an incredible basketball player. You loved to play. You rapped incredible community. When did you realize, oh, shit, it's not just about the love. This is also a business. How soon in your careers did you realize that?
I would say at about 30. Right? 30. It's like, oh, I'm not going to be able to play forever. I better start.
Oh, well, that's late.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I'm saying late as a professional athlete, that is late in your career.
For sure. But we weren't making a lot of money either. So it was just like...
The love. And
I love to play basketball. Like, I have loved it. I mean, if there's two things I love, it's basketball and Jesus. And then I just go. But I've been a basketball player.
This seems like that should be in a
movie. No, that's a good line.
If there's two things I love, it's basketball and Jesus. We'll be right back after this commercial.
And did you, at that moment, were you like, I'm going to be a coach? And did
no.
you say you wanted to be a coach in the NBA? When did that, how
no,
did that all happen?
No. So I was doing some women's broadcasting for like the Pac-12. And they were walking off. We had just called their game. And the losing coach was like walking back. And the the analyst was like, see, that's why, like, TV is the best. You never have to leave the gym a loser. And I was like, yep, it's not for me. Because you can't ever win.
Because you can't win.
You can't leave a winner either.
Yes.
So that was kind of my, like, aha moment that I was like, okay, I'm going to get into coaching. Because at the end of the day, the people that had impact on me were coaches, teammates, the relationships that I built. So I decided I'd much rather be in the business, like, in it with them, than talking about them.
And how did the coaching in the NBA come about?
Yeah,
and to his point, did you feel people were actually, when did you know people were actually taking your criticism to heart just listening to you?
That's a good point.
Because, I mean, obviously you got the shirt on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But actually feeling like you're getting through to some of the players because, I mean, you know, I know Coach, and he's a Nelly fan. So.
Oh, I know.
We ran into you in
a hotel.
Yeah,
in
Charlotte. Yeah, hell yeah. So I love him to death.
We were like on our third dinner, about 8 bottles in that
Coach
point.
Loved a drink, too. He loved his wine.
Yeah.
So I was coming off a knee injury, and he called me. So normally I'd be overseas playing in Russia, and I blew my knee out. So I was there rehabbing, and I asked if I could come to all the practices and just kind of watch. And he called me, and he was like, well, why don't you come to all our coaches' meetings, too? So I was like, I would do rehab at, 7 in the morning, shower, go over to Spurs facility and go to their coaches' meeting and then watch practices. Fast forward, 6-7 months. They won the championship. They beat Miami. I was playing. He called me, offered me the job, and I was like, yes.
I
was like, let me think about it.
Yes. Then you got to play it smooth.
Yeah. And then, I was with him 8 years.
Was there any player at first out of the men that you knew that you connected to that was really, like, horning in on your advice and on your insight at the time that you felt that helped him?
Well, like, I was really good friends with Tony Parker. Like, me and him were real tight. He's like my little brother, so respect was never an issue.
Yeah.
But when you talk about different relationships and trying to connect, like the guys come in, they hug me. They ain't hugging no assistant coaches.
No.
They're doing this. They see me, they hug me, which is, it's just different. I'm not saying it's better, it's worse. It's a different kind of connection, and it's a different kind of respect, if I'm being honest.
Oh, yeah.
Bringing a little full circle, we're talking about 99.
Mm-hmm.
Word on the streets, Masters, selling Masters. Yeah. You talk about that a little bit. Like
but
that.
Also, I want you to talk about it from 2 points of view.
Okay.
There's Nelly, mm-hmm. the artist.
Mm-hmm.
There's Cornel Haynes, the businessman. Right. What's the, how do you filter both of those?
You can never really sell anything like that forever. Technically, at least. So, in like 30 years, it comes back.
It reverts back.
Right. Right.
So, if I ain't took the little 50 mil and made nothing happen in 30 years, then I need my ass whooped anyway.
Right. Of course,
you
of
see
course.
What I'm saying? Like, yes. But, you hear a lot of people, I would never do it. Why wouldn't you do it? That's your equity. That's your goal. Like, that's why you would never have generational wealth. Because what you don't understand is that's what you're vying for. Every time LeBron steps on that court, he's doing the same thing with his body. His body's his health.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's his equity.
Right.
Yep.
If he can lease that out for 30 years.
But what you just said, Nelly, is a point. You can call it economics. You can call it financial engineering. Yeah. It's something we don't get taught. And you have to, people make these decisions every day. You have an asset that generates cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
It's X cash flow.
Yeah.
Somebody is willing to pay you Y. The question becomes, it's not selling it or not, because people saying they're not selling it to me are always saying, it's like a pride and ego thing.
Yeah,
sure.
Which, if you don't, it's like a business. The same thing with a business. If you don't want to sell it, there's no problem with that. But it's a simple math thing. Can I make Y worth more than X was paying me year over year? If you take the money and go buy Rolls Royces and fucking jewelry, then you made a bad decision.
Exactly.
If you take the money, you pay your taxes, and then take the money and turn it into more money, then you take that because he's going to buy other assets. Go buy buildings.
The man said, pay your taxes.
He's first, you got to do that.
Write that down.
Uncle Sam.
Write that down.
Pay your taxes.
Is Uncle Sam in one of these cameras?
Yeah. He's in there. Old trust.
He's everywhere.
Old trust.
But his point is right that we never learn making money. It's like, because we always come up, We don't have no money. You just want to make some money. Make money. You actually realize, if you talk to very wealthy people, they will tell you money becomes a problem. They rather have assets. Because once you get money, you got to pay taxes. But if you own the building, it gains value. You don't pay taxes, and you can borrow against it. It's all what he just said is the key. What does he do with the 50?
No, but I think you're taught, like, you're trying to get to a certain spot, and then you think that's going to make you happy, and then you get to that spot, and you ain't happy.
At
the end of the day, you can't snuggle with your $100 bills.
No.
Like, and I'll just go back to the, you know, as an athlete, you have a shelf life.
Yeah.
You ain't making this money for the rest of your life. No. Now, if you invest it right and do the right business moves, yes, it will make money for you. But the problem is we get these big chunks of money as kids, and then we don't teach them how to make money off their money.
100%.
And that's a big problem in the NBA, or just professional sports in general. You get this big chunk of money, and then by the time you're out the league 3-4 years, you're broke.
Sure.
And it's like, how? And it's because of that, I think, lack of investment, but also just like somebody needs to take some of these guys under their wings and say, hey, let's do this. Business partners, business moves. And I think you see it more and more. It's becoming like popular. Like you see all the guys dipping in wine,
dipping in anything. Yeah.
Like they become businessmen. They're enterprises. Every individual is an enterprise. On an NBA floor.
But I was always a hustler.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm not, and I don't mean to say that. I don't know who's watching, but statutes of limitations are far gone by now. But listen, I'm just saying, you got calculated risk, though. Well, like
you
going
back, on a certain deal, you went and bet on yourself.
Because I always know at the end of the day, I know how to make money. I just know. I've always known. Saving money, investing money, that's the key to learning. Making money was never my key to learning. I knew how to do that.
Who taught you how to invest? Like,
My mom worked in fast
food. Because I imagine when you first started making it.
My mom worked in fast food restaurants for 35 to 40 years. Wow. And if you ever worked at a McDonald's, Dairy Queen, Rallies, or any of that, you know how hard work that is, and it's constant. And my mom did it for over 30 years. She got me my first job. My first job came when I was 14 years old. Homecoming was coming up at high school. My mom said, I got $50. That's the most I can give you. She said, but what I can give you, because she was a manager at the McDonald's in Clayton, Missouri. Shout out to Lou.
Yeah.
And she said, yo, I can't give you a real job, but on the weekends, they got truck. And if you know anything about truck in the morning, that's when they come and they stock the freezers and all that other shit, and they be needing people to take it off the thing. She said, yo, I can give you a job there. I said, cool, I'll take it. And the owner would pay me $25, boom, boom, boom. So I wound up getting about $140 by time, you know, homecoming came, which was a lot for me, being a freshman. You know what I'm saying? So she taught me how to work. My mama has never not had a job until I pulled up at Rallies after country grandma and say, yo, tell them you're done.
Yeah.
And I'll take some large fries.
Yeah.
On the way out.
Tell them you quit. And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, tell them
it's over.
You quit.
I was thinking about you, Maverick, in the sense that you've also become known as a prolific deal maker, right? Now, people would emulate actors and comedians and rappers, but now people want to be you guys. Like, you got a whole generation of folks that think it's easy to be the deal maker, the mover and shaker in the world. I don't know if people would know the journey or how you feel when you are the only person in the room, when you do have to be creative, when you do take one thing and turn it into another, right? Like, what? Just talk about that for a minute.
I got very lucky, blessed by God, to have one skill. I once saw a quote in life by Albert Einstein. It resonated more than anything with me, which was, I have no special talent, I'm just passionately curious. So I've been blessed. I had one of those grandmothers. My family, I think I told both of you, I was from a little tiny place in Missouri, my dad's side, called Mexico, Missouri. Have you ever heard of Mexico?
Yeah, I'm from Caruthersville.
T. Lou is from down
there.
Yes, exactly. So I grew up with a grandmother who ran it after hours.
That's how I got my name, Maverick. She was, her favorite TV show was the 60s show.
Yeah.
What was the cowboy and a card player?
Wait a minute, hold on. Your mother ran the after hours?
My grandmother.
Your grandmother ran the after hours from Cleveland.
She started in...
Mexico?
She started in Mexico. So my grandmother and my grandfather was a construction worker.
Wait a minute, I know about Mexico.
But he couldn't...
She ran the after hours in Mexico?
For sure.
She was popping.
Miss Carter, to the day we had to make her stop.
Statutes of limitations.
We had to make her stop. My grandmother couldn't, when you was a construction worker back then, as a black man, you couldn't keep a job. They would hire you for a short time, do a job. So they went from Mexico to Joliet, Illinois, which is another little town outside of Chicago, Racine, Wisconsin, and then they landed in Akron, where I'm from.
Okay.
But the whole way, black family style. My grandmother had 7 kids in 9.5 years.
Talk about hustling.
Yeah. My mom would pull up on a Friday at my grandmother's. I was like 6 years old, front door. And she said, get out the car and go in there. Somebody in there. Before the door got open, she'd be pulled. She'd go. Go. See? I looked back.
Nobody's here.
Shit.
She'd burn the rubber. And I would be there until Sunday night.
Yeah.
My mom was 22 when she had me, her, and my dad. They was out in the streets popping. But in that, learning that, I learned to understand and read people quickly. Understand. My grandmother knew how people felt and who was who and how to treat people, and because she loaned money and said, you need a little money the next Friday here. I know you're going to pay me back. But not him, because I know he don't pay me back. He fuck up his money. So I learned those skills, and I took him to work with me.
Oh, that's dope.
And I love to learn. That's the thing. For you, like for you said, you a comedian. Been doing it forever. Do you feel like you're still learning to be a comedian? Is it still?
Oh, definitely.
Because you, to us as a fan, you've mastered it.
The idea to be creative is one that I really, you know, I appreciate. That's the opportunity that exists. And so I take a lot of shots. You know,
you just get like the ball shots.
Up. Yes. Get the ball up, baby. Let's go. You Broadway. I'm going. You call me.
Coach,
I'm doing
how was his form?
Drama.
How was his form there on the jumper? How was the form?
I mean,
how
would you? The whole side. He got a whole jab step with just, it.
Yeah. He said, "You see jab. It."
His mouth. Hey, I used to be in the park, though. I used to be in the, you know. I used to be out there. I seen people play.
So you're not afraid to take your shots.
I'm not afraid to take shots. Big shots, little shots. That's the other thing. Like, as a creative person, I'll just jump in with other creatives. Like, if people doing something dope, I'm going to jump in. Like, I'm that person you can call. That's what a lot of my goodwill comes from. You know, it's a movie. Afion got a good, funny little movie out about the hip hop 50. It's coming out. People gonna see it. It's a parody. Him doing a lot of characters. He called me on a humbug. Was like, "Bruh, I need you to come in and do this Biggie thing for me real quick." We got a Coogee sweater. I went over there and like, boom. And then, I mean, I shot for 30 minutes. He like, "Bro, you killing this movie." But it was an opportunity just to do something
fun. To do work, yes. Keep
like,
you sharp, too.
Play a character, you get sharp, yep, you get sharp, you get your pen out and you try things, right? And so I really love that about the opportunity to entertain people more than anything. And so that's really the spirit in which I kind of go forward. And I think that's really what we do as comedians.
And your next movie is Outlaw Posse.
Yeah, Outlaw Posse.
Mario Van Peebles, a legend.
Legend.
Western, dog. And again, another opportunity.
Okay, but I need to be called for the music for that.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, okay, man. They put it together. I'm loving
it. Cutting the same deal he cut you on that album.
Hold on. Sam, we want to hear about working with Mario Van Peebles. Please, because he's a legend.
Mario is just, he's just such a solid person, man. He directed me. I did a little small run on Power, and he was the director. And then so we had the Western shaping up, and he was like, "Man, I really like the way that you came in and did this. Would you consider doing a Western?" And I was like, "Of course, you know." And I've ridden a horse maybe twice, so.
That felt like a lie, but keep going.
Dog, twice.
Twice?
And I'm running horse. The one is the slow one that somebody caught. And some little
the one
kid,
in front of the grocery store. That don't
so
count.
He
said the horse so tired.
The horse in front of the grocery store. That don't count.
But he called me up. We shot in Montana. Beautiful movie. Opportunity to be in, you know, in a Western. And, you know, Mario's just great, man. You know, he understands, like, you know, he understands what it is that he wants an actor to do, and he'll give you, you know, he'll give you a place to play, to, you know, be creative as a creative, and yet he, you know, he's there about his day as a director. Like, he like, I got to get these shots, this shot, and I'm going to keep it moving. So it was just a great opportunity. We become great friends. He's just cool, and the movie's going to be great, man.
Now, do you going to act again? You real real husbands, you was hilarious, long as you are. You've been...
I like it when it's right. You know my problem? I don't like reading.
Yeah. Like in life or...
No. Fuck you.
Scripts.
No. I'm saying, like, you know, when you go in and then, like...
Read, like, yeah.
Like now, for the longest yard, I didn't have to read for real. Adam Sandler wanted me to play that role.
Gotcha.
So, I get it, and that's probably why I don't. I don't knock a process for anything. If I choose not to participate in that process, it's just like, it's just different. Like, yeah, going into reading is very humbling.
Very humbling.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You're sitting in there, and I didn't
No matter who you are, you treat it. They're like, are you
I've now? Sent in, you know, you're sitting video. In front of audition a whiteboard, tape. Audition tapes, and you're reading to yourself, and you're trying to talk to yourself. I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is the most corniest shit I've ever talked in my life. Like, I'm not talking to anybody. I was just, yeah, and who do you think you are, Mr. Mailman?
Yeah. You know,
you know what I mean? Like, and I hate that part of it, and I just always do things that are more geared towards knowing that they want Nelly. I'm blessed for that. I'm not saying that I'm special or anything, because I understand that reading. It's like wanting to be a rapper but hating to go to the studio.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, no, motherfucker. Like, I love being in the studio. You know what I mean? But yeah. I understand that, and that's the thing. It's just like the most humbling part for me. I commend y'all. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, they
all
there.
Of these guys, they look like Seth. They all sitting out there. You're just like, well.
One of my favorite guilty pleasures I'm doing this show is sitting with people like, you know, I've been a fan of yours since the Liberty, fan of yours since day one.
You're just hitting me.
Yes.
Your freaking face.
She just put it together. Like, we've known each other for years. Like, from New York.
Yeah. Whoa, hold on. It's all good, right?
It's love.
Okay.
Not too much love,
but you're sitting there, and I'm like, freaking know this guy.
Jesus Christ.
I know this guy, but it's 20 years ago.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Fucking Paul.
But it's been dope, like, sitting here. But I also am excited as a fan of learning, like, the other shit y'all doing now. Like, you have a barbecue sauce. Yeah. Talk about that. You have businesses outside of, like, I want you guys to talk about that.
Anthony and I have AC Barbecue. And, you know, it's a business we built, me and Anthony Anderson, we built, both of us like to cook, and we start grilling. So we came up with this concept, and we started building it last summer. We ended up doing a TV show around it. So we got rubs and sauces, and we're in Walmart and big online business. And we're going to have our first store open on Jackson State University.
Wow.
And so
we're just busy on the grill. You get busy on the grill?
Yeah. Lightweight, but I get it.
What's your shoe getting? You wear the sandals with no sock? Like, I need to know.
No. I'm I can't be out there like that.
Yeah. No, you always diversify just because of the hustler mentality?
I've been very fortunate, man. Apple Bottoms, I'm relaunching Apple Bottoms.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm relaunching Apple Bottoms coming up. And I think it's just...
Is it hustler's mentality, or you do like
always
I love,
a hustler mentality?
Or is it I love this, I love that, so I'm doing it? It's like, or are you looking at where's the opportunity?
I think it's both. I think it's both. As you grow and as you have success, then you learn to get into things that you love. I think when you're starting,
that's a great point.
You'll do whatever the hell you need to do
to try and make some money.
Because that's what a lot of brothers in the hood, quote unquote, that hustle a different way. They like, man, this all I need. This all I'm going to do. This all I know. No, that ain't.
Or their risk is greater.
Yeah.
Or their risk is greater than their reward.
And you can be much more. I don't knock anything. What I don't like a lot of times, and we get this in hip-hop a lot, and I just hate hypocrisy, bro. Like, it's not righteous. Hypocrisy is not righteous.
No, for sure.
And that's what I was saying about, listen, I love Cat. But I hate the hypocrisy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because when he was rolling...
You stole JB Smooth's joke, bro. You stole it. Your very first Netflix special, when you came out talking about this song, when he was like, yo, this is my jam. You could do so much. You just make up a dance. That's J.B. Smoove. He did that back on freaking comedy. Yeah. What's the one Martin Lawrence used to
Def do? Comedy Jam.
Def Comedy Jam. J.B. Smoove did the same thing. Interpretation wasn't the exact same, but it was the same. His joke wasn't the exact same, but it's an interpretation. It don't matter. What are you talking about?
Certain things are just cultural, man. They are our culture. You cannot own the culture.
No.
That means people can't do a black preacher.
No.
You can't do a mama
art
joke at night.
Art inspires art.
You can't come in. If I say anything
whooping
about
joke.
Coming home and when the lights go out, then I stole your joke. Yeah. Well, what time you got to be at the house? So the street lights come on. Oh, then you stole that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You're listening to The Shot Podcast, presented by Grey Goose Vodka. Whether it's a dinner party for 10 or a small kickback, you know the vibes will always be right if you're surrounded by your favorite people. And great company pairs best with a great cocktail. So make it a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Impress your guests in style with an espresso martini or the always effortless classic martini with a lemon twist. No matter what you decide, everyone can appreciate the smooth, delicate taste that only a Grey Goose Vodka Martini can provide. For more info on how to craft a vodka-based cocktail, visit greygoose.com and remember to always sip responsibly. Sip responsibly. www.responsibledrinking.org. 2024, Grey Goose. Its trade dress and the geese device are trademarks. Imported by Grey Goose Importing Company, Coral Gables, Florida. Vodka, 40% alcohol by volume. Distilled from French wheat.